We're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Samach Zayin Omer Aleph. The Mishnah is going to discuss the issue of an ubar, a fetus. We know the halacha is with regards to a bat Yisrael that marries a kohen that she's entitled to eat truma because of her husband. Because she's a kinyan kaspo of her husband, she has an entitlement to truma. And even after her husband passes away, she's entitled to eat truma if she has zera, if she has offspring from that kohen. The question that the Mishnah is going to deal with now is, what happens if the woman is pregnant? She has a fetus. How does the fetus impact this woman's ability to eat truma after her husband has passed away? Now, the same will be true in the opposite, which is if you have a bat kohen who is married to a Yisrael, then that bat kohen, if she has no children, will return to Beit Aviyah, assuming she's not a psula, and she'll be able to eat or participate in the truma of her father's household. On the other hand, if she has zera, if she has any offspring from the Yisrael, she no longer will be entitled to the truma. So again, the same question arises with regards to a fetus, an ubar. How does the ubar impact on this woman? And lastly, you will have a case by a bat kohen, who's actually married to a kohen. How does the ubar, how does the fetus impact her? Because if she has zera, if she has offspring from the kohen, then she eats and is entitled because of the kohen himself. On the other hand, if she has no zera from this kohen, then her entitlement comes from her father's household in terms of the truma. And what is the impact of that? What is the impact of the fact that she is either based out of her father's house or her husband's house, and that's where she eats truma? So in all these scenarios, the question that we really have to ask is, what's the status of the ubar, the fetus? How does that impact on the woman? And that's what our Mishnah is going to discuss. Bat Yisrael, Shniseit the Kohen. You have a Bat Yisrael who's married to a Kohen, umet, and the Kohen dies. Veheinicha me'uberet, and he leaves her in a state of being pregnant. Lo yochlu avadeha bitruma, mipnei chelko shel ubar. The avadim may not participate in truma because of the rights of the ubar in the avadim. Sha'ubar posel, ve'inu ma'achil divei Rabbi Yosi. The ubar has the ability to cause problems, be posel, make someone ineligible to eat truma, veinu machil, and doesn't grant the right to someone to eat truma. So the way that Rashi explains it over here, it's all talking about the aim, the mother, which is ubar posel. Posel is in the sense that if a woman is pregnant, the ubar then prevents her from participating in truma. So for instance, in a case of a bat kohen that is married to Yisrael, in that case, if she has children, she may not return to her father's house. And in the case where she's pregnant with an ubar, the ubar is posel. The ubar prevents her from returning to her father's house, even though there's no child here yet. The fact that she's pregnant already is posel, makes her ineligible to return to her father's house. Ve'eno machil is a case of a bat Yisrael that's married to a kohen. That bat Yisrael is not entitled to eat truma. If she had a zera, if she had children or offspring, she would be entitled to eat truma. Here, the ubar is not classified as offspring, and therefore, eno machil, it doesn't grant her the right to eat truma until the baby is born. So that's the way Rashi explains it, that the statement of the Mishnah is, sheubar posel, veino machil, according to Rabbi Yossi, is referencing the mother in both cases, the impact that the ubar has on the mother. On the other hand, Tosafot says that the explanation of the statement is near the Faresh, ubar posel ba'avdei aviv, that the ubar is posel, like the context of our Mishnah, means that the ubar ruins it for the slaves of his father. As far as the avadim are concerned, they are kinyan kaspo of the father. Now, if they're kinyan kaspo of the father, then they eat truma because of the father. But now that the father has passed away, they no longer have rights to eat truma because of the father. And the problem is that the ubar, who is yet to be born, he ruins it for those avadim because the ownership of the avadim is now captured by this ubar. But the ubar does not have the ability to grant truma to another party. And so because of it, these avadim now are stuck because this ubar technically owns them or will own them. And because of that, they will not be entitled to truma. Veinu machil et imo, and his mother he does not be machil. So if it's a bat Yisrael the kohen, this ubar in a bat Yisrael causes her a problem because he does not grant her yet the right to eat truma until he is born. On the other hand, he also causes problems for the avadim, the servants of his father, because his ownership now makes it that they cannot participate in the truma. So that's the way Tosfot learns it, because contextually, that's what the Mishnah is speaking about. It's speaking about avadim, and it's speaking about the mother, not about the two scenarios of a mother, especially since the next Mishnah is talking about the cases of mothers. So this case seems to be focused on the avadim. And so the way Tosafot explains Rashi is that if you explain it, that it's talking about the mothers of a conscious perish kula miltaimo, even though over here we're talking about avadim, he must be saying that the ubar is posel ve'inu machilat imo, and hu adin la avadim. And so too would be the case with regards to the avadim, with the servants. So now, going back to our Mishnah, the scenario in the Mishnah where the Bat Yisrael is left pregnant when she was married to a Kohen. If she has no other children, and she is now pregnant with this fetus, first of all, does not have the ability to grant her the right to Truma. And in addition to that, for the Avadim, it causes them a problem, because whether the Avadim are owned by her, or whether the Avadim are owned by her husband, whether they're Nichsei Tzon or Barzel, or they're Nichsei Malog, they do not have entitlement to Truma now, because the wife does not have rights to Truma, so she cannot grant those rights to her Avdei Malog. And as far as the Avdei Tzon and Barzel are concerned that were owned by the father, now the Ubar technically has that ownership, and the Ubar doesn't have the ability to grant them the right to Truma. In a scenario where this woman already has children from the Kohen, and now she's pregnant, then as far as the woman is concerned, she will eat Truma because she has already other children. The Ubar would not prevent her from eating Truma because she has children from this Kohen that grant her that right. But the Ubar will, in this instance, affect the Avadim. The Avdei Tzon Barzel will be affected because, along with the existing children, this Ubar is an inheritor of the father. And because this Ubar is a partial owner of the Avdei Tzon Barzel, then those Avdei Tzon Barzel may not participate in Truma because of the portion of the Ubar's ownership in them. As far as the Nechzei Malog or the Avdei Malog, they will eat because the mother or the wife here has the ability to eat Truma because of the other children that are already born. So her right to eat Truma will also be passed transitively to the Avdei Malog, that they will be entitled to eat Truma. But the Avdei Tzon Barzel, which were owned by the father, are now passed in Yerusha to the children. Those will have a problem in terms of Truma when there's an Ubar, when there's a fetus, because that Ubar has rights in those Avdei Tzon Barzel. And as we said in the Mishnah, the Ubar is posel ve'inu machil. He causes problems for these Avadim, even though there are other children that are already existing that own them and technically should grant them Truma. The reason as to why will be discussed in the Gemara. Now the Mishnah continues and says, Amru lo, the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yossi, Me'achar, Shehadat alanu abat Yisrael kohen, after you have this edut or this statement, testimony about the fact that abat Yisrael kohen is affected by an Ubar, Afbat Kohen the Kohen? Maybe in the scenario where you have a Bat Kohen who's married to a Kohen, umate, and then her husband dies, ve'nicha me'uberet, and he leaves her pregnant with a fetus. Lo yochlu avadeha b'truma, b'pnei chelko shel ubar. In that case, the avadim should not participate in the truma because of the chelek, the rights of the ubar to the avadim. So even though with regards to the woman, miman of shach, she's going to eat truma, because either this child will grant her the right once it's born to eat truma from her husband's household, or if the child is not a viable entity, she'll go back to her father's house and eat truma. So miman of shach, the woman is entitled to truma over here, whether she gives birth to this baby or not. On the other hand, as far as the avadim are concerned, the avdei malog will follow the wife, but the Avdei Tzon Barzel here have an issue, because the Avdei Tzon Barzel now technically are owned by the Ubar. And since they're owned by the Ubar is the one who grants them the right to Truma. And since he grants them the right to Truma, and an Ubar is not able to do that, he does not have the effectiveness of granting Truma, then the ownership of the Ubar here will cause a problem for these Avdei Tzon Barzel. And they will not be able to participate in the Truma because of this Ubar. So why should it matter whether it's a Bat Yisrael or Kohen? Even a Bat Kohen to a Kohen will have this same problem because of the Ubar's ownership of the Avadim. Now the Gemara wants to understand what is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi's position. Ibaidahu, Taimud Rabbi Yossi Mishum Dekasavar, Ubar Bemezara Zarhu. The reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi's position is that a fetus inside of a foreign entity here means someone who is not a Kohen, someone who's not entitled to Truma, then they have a classification like a Zar. And so therefore the Ubar Bemei Imo, here it's a Bat Yisrael, so the Ubar, which in many times we view as Ubar Yerech Imo, that the fetus is an extension of the mother, and the mother who is a Bat Yisrael, therefore the Ubar himself will be classified as Yisrael and not a Kohen. And if that's the case, he doesn't have entitlement to Truma, and since he doesn't have entitlement to Truma, he can't grant that right, whether it's to his mother if she has no other children, or to the Avadim, to the servants, if he is in utero. Hodilma Yalud Machil, a child that is born can grant rights of Truma. She'enu Yalud, the one who is not yet born, Enu Machil, doesn't have the ability to grant those rights. And that's based on the Pasuk that says, V'yalid Beito Heim Yochlu Bilachmo. The Pasuk says that those that are born in his household, Heim Yochlu Bilachmo, they will participate in his Lechem, they will participate in the Truma. And the Gemara darshans on that, Kari Be Yachilu, that they will also grant the right to eat. And so, Yalid Beito, only those that are born have the ability to grant rights of Truma. But those that have yet to be born, those that are in utero, they don't have the ability to grant the rights. So the Gemara says, the my nafkamino. What's the nafkamino between these two reasons of Rabbi Yossi? Is the reason because the fetus in utero has a din of a zar? Or is it simply that the child doesn't have the ability to grant the rights of Truma until he is born? So the ubar b'mei kohenet. The nafkamino is to a child that's found inside of a bat kohen. Because so in this instance, the child inside of the bat kohen doesn't have a din of a zar, because if he's seen as an extension of his mother is a bat kohen, and she has entitlement to truma either from her father's household or through her husband who is a kohen. Whereas if the reasoning here is about the birth, meaning that only a child that is born can grant those rights, but a child that is yet to be born can't grant those rights, it'll be irrelevant whether the mother is a bat kohen or the mother is a bat Yisrael. Either way, the fetus doesn't have the ability to grant rights in truma until the fetus is born. And that won't matter if it's a bat kohen carrying the baby or a bat Yisrael carrying the baby. My, which one is it? So, Amar Rabba, Hainu Taimed Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi's reasoning is the kasavar ubar b'mei zara, zarhu. So Rabba believes that Rabbi Yossi's reasoning is that a child inside of a quote-unquote foreign woman, a bat Yisrael, has the status of a zar until he's born and then takes on the yichus of his father to be a kohen. Rabbi Yossi Amar, Yalud Machil. A baby, when it's born, has the ability to grant rights. While it's in utero, while it's a fetus, it doesn't have that ability to grant rights. They posed this question to Rabbi Yossi. After you brought your testimony, you stated the halacha with regards to a bat Yisrael to a kohen. Bat kohen le kohen, mahu. What's the din if it's a bat kohen who's married to a kohen? Amar lehem zushamati, v'zulo shamati. Says, about the Bat Yisrael, I heard the din. With regards to the Bat Kohen to Kohen, I did not hear the din. So, i'amart bishlama ubar b'mei zara zarhu. If you say the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi's position is that a fetus takes on the properties of the mother, then hainu dekamerle, then we can explain or understand what it means that Rabbi Yossi responded to them and said, zushamati, v'zulo shamati. That he says, I heard about the Bat Yisrael to a Kohen, but I did not hear about the case of a Bat Kohen to a Kohen. If you say that the whole question here has to do with the fact whether the child is born or not born, my zushamati, vizuloshamati, then why should there be any distinction here in the cases? It has nothing to do with the mother. It all has to do with the fact of whether the child is born or not born. So it should be relevant whether we're talking about a Bat Yisrael to a Kohen or a Bat Kohen to a Kohen. Only once the child is born does he have impact in terms of the ability to grant Truma. So why would he say Zushamati, Zuloshamati? Because the outcome or the halach on these cases should be identical. Ihihi, it's the exact same case. And if it's the exact same case, how can he say, yes, this I know, this I don't know, or this I heard, I have a Masorah about it, this I don't have a Masorah about it? it should be the same case. He should be able to extrapolate the din without any question. So that's kasha. That is a difficulty on the position of Rav Yosef. For Rabbo, who explains that the issue here is a ubar b'mei zara is considered to be a zar, that a child in utero with the zara is considered to be a zar, then the question about zu shamati v'zu shamati is relevant. The way that Rashi explains it is, zu shamati, this I heard, the isur, which is the case of bat Yisrael Kohen. Zulo shamati means I didn't hear this, the Israel a heter. In the case of an ubar bebat kohen, then it should be the heter. The other rishonim that read it kipashuto, which is about this din, I have a misora. But the other din, I don't have a misora. And therefore I don't know what the din is in that case. But if you believe that the whole question here is birth, then the din should be easily extrapolated. It should be irrelevant whether the mother is a bat Israel or the mother is a bat kohen, because it's all about birth. Nothing to do with the status of the mother. And so this braita seems to favor the interpretation of Rabba over Rav Yosef. And as Tosafot explains here, the Rabbanan that were posing the question to Rav Yosef and saying, why don't you extrapolate the din? They must have thought, like Rav Yosef, that Rav Yosef's reason is Yalud Machil, and therefore the din should be easily extrapolated. Rav Yosef responds to them and says, no, I can't extrapolate the din because my reasoning is not because of Yalud Machil, but rather because Ubar B'mei Imo is considered to be a Zar. And therefore Rabbi Yossi says, I'm not certain about extrapolating the din from the case of Bat Yisrael to a Bat Kohen. Even though Rashi says that he could extrapolate the din, it just will come out with the opposite conclusion. Again, there are other Rishonim who suggest that means that I can't extrapolate the din because I only heard it with this case, not in the case of Bat Kohen. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Zo Divrei Rabbi Yosi. This is the position of Rabbi Yosi. Aval Chachamim Omrim Yesh Lo Banim Ochlim Mishum Banim. Eno Banim Ochlim Mishum Achim. Eno Achim Ochlim Mishum Mishpacha Kula. Then they eat because of their relationship to the family which has the status of a family of Kohanim. With regards to the Abadim, if the Kohen himself has children, those children will grant the right to the Avadim to continue to eat Truma, because now they are under the ownership of his children or his offspring who are Kohanim. If he doesn't have children, then they eat because of his brothers. The next line of inheritors, if he doesn't have children, are his brothers. And his brothers who are Kohanim will also entitle the Avadim to eat in Truma. If he has no brothers, then it moves to other parts of his family. But his family is a family of Kohanim, so no matter where the Avadim end up, they have the rights to Truma because of the familial status of being Kohanim. Therefore, as long as the Ubar is not born, then the next of kin who would inherit these Avadim grants them the right to Truma. Now, once the child is born, he will become the official Yoresh. And as the official Yoresh, then he will grant them Truma because of his status as a Kohen. But until he's born, then the Avadim fall to whoever would have been the next in line for inheritance, whether it means that there are other children and they are the inheritors, or it means that there are uncles, brothers of the Kohen, or his family that are the technical inheritors until this Ubar is born. They will grant rights to the Avadim to eat in the interim until the birth of the Ubar. Whereas Rabbi Yossi sees that the Ubar himself has impact because his ownership in the Avadim have impact. Meaning that the machloket here between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim is the Ubar's rights to these Avadim. Rabbi Yossi believes the Ubar has a right in these Avadim, and therefore he causes them a problem. He's posel the Avadim from consuming or participating in the eating of Truma. Whereas according to the Chachamim, the Ubar has no rights in these Avadim until he's born. And therefore, whoever does have the rights will grant the Avadim Truma until the birth of this Ubar. So Gemara says, Zu velo svirile. So when it says that this is the din of Rabbi Yossi, but the Chachamim disagree, it makes it sound like Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying, that's Rabbi Yossi. But the real din is like the Chachamim, meaning that they don't hold like Rabbi Yossi. V'hamar le Shmuel de Rav Chana Bagta. Didn't Shmuel say to Rav Chana, Rashi brings two interpretations, either Bagta'a, which is from Baghdad, or Bagta'a comes from the word Agada, equivalent maybe of a Magid, that it was a person who was an expert in Agadata, So that's Rav Chana Bagta or Agadata. Pok, Aitili Beyasara. Says, go out and grab me 10 people. The Emel Chaban Payu, so that I can say to you in front of them that I'm a Zaked Ubar Kana. That a person who grants something to an Ubar, that Ubar is Koneh. He has the ability to take possession of the item. So you see from here that Shmuel believes that an Ubar does have the ability of ownership. If he has the ability of ownership, then he really should hold like Rabbi Yossi. That Rabbi Yossi who says that the Ubar here has impact on the Avadim, on the slaves that his father left. Ella zo usvirle. No, that he says this is the position of Rabbi Yossi, and he holds like it. So Maika Mashmalan, what is he teaching us then? That this is Rabbi Yossi's position, the Rabbanon disagree. The Pelige Rabbanon Alei, the Rabbi Yossi. That the Rabbanon argue on Rabbi Yossi. That's what he's coming to teach us, that there's someone who argues on Rabbi Yossi. Umi Pelige, do they really argue on Rabbi Yossi? Vahamar Rabbi Zakai, Zo Edut Ha'id Rabbi Yossi Mi Pishmai Vabtalyon. This, what we've seen in our Mishnah about the Ubar, that testimony Rabbi Yossi brought in the name of Shmai Ve'Avtalion, Vihodulo. And it seems to be that the Chachamim acquiesced to this position or accepted this position. So I'm Ravashi. Ravashi says, Miktani Vikiblu. Doesn't say that they accepted his position, that they believed that he was right. It just says, Vihodulo Ktani. Just says that they admitted that what he was saying had value to it. So Rishonim interpret this in slightly different ways. Some suggest that Hodulo means simply that, yes, they accepted that he had a Misora from Shmai Ve'Avtalion, and they understood his Misora, but they had a different Misora, and therefore they disagree over here. Hodulo does not mean that they acquiesced to his halakhic conclusion. They just acquiesced that he must have had a Misora, and this Misora seems genuine and understandable, but they don't hold like it. That's one way to explain the Chachamim. The other possibilities of explaining Hodulo are that Vehodulo means that they accepted the Misora that he had, just that they explained it differently, or they gave a different interpretation to that Misora, and therefore they came to a different conclusion. Now, what's interesting over here, and Tosafot discusses this question, which is that the statement of Shmuel that you're Mezakeh Ubar, that the Ubar has a right of ownership, whereas everywhere out in Shas, it seems to be that an Ubar does not have the ability to make kinyanim. Why over here is an exceptional case? So you can see the last Tosafot on the Amud says, "Afagav d'shmo pasik b'afal pik Rabbi Yochanan sandlar de'in adam maknet davar shelo bali olam." Person doesn't have the ability to grant something that doesn't exist to a future party or to a future item. Nevertheless, it must be that shmo chashiv ubar kebali olam. He must believe that an ubar has an existence. It's not a theoretical or esoteric item. It is here, and it's considered to be a davar shebali olam, and therefore there's no problem with the kinyan over here. Some of the Rishonim distinguish between stam yerusha, which the ubar does not have a right in, versus hamizakelu ubar, someone who's intentionally trying to grant the right to the ubar. Since it's a father trying to grant the right to an ubar, there the father, because of his closeness to this ubar, because it's his child, he might have the ability to overcome the problem, whereas in stam yerusha, or by a stam person, he wouldn't be able to do it. So this is a unique relationship between the father and the child. And many believe that the din here is a din of shchiv meira, which is all a din d'rabbanan, which is the rabbanan granted the right to someone who is on their deathbed to make their last will and testament and have it be binding. So that is all a din d'rabbanan. And so to over here, we're talking about a shchiv meira, someone who is on their deathbed, and if they're mezakelu ubar, the chachamim allowed that to go through, even though in other areas of halacha that would not work because you're lacking a proper kinyan or tadavar shelo bali olam. Just like shchiv meira, his statements have impact without a kinyan, even though elsewhere in halacha they won't have impact. So to over here, they have that impact. And so this is an exceptional case because it's a case of shchiv meira. It is not the standard halacha, and that's why we find in other places that ubar is not koneh, or you cannot be makneh something to an ubar. It's only in this case that it works. So the Rishonim are all trying to differentiate between the case that's mentioned here by Shmuel and the standard halacha, which is that an ubar does not have zchiyah. So we saw Tosafot's reasoning. We saw other Rishonim who distinguish between stam yerusha and a father to an ubar. And then we see mentioned the majority of Rishonim who think that this is a din in shchiv meira, and it's an exceptional case, and it doesn't have broader application with regards to an ubar. Now, why he used be'asara over here, that's a standard for making something very public or significantly public, because in terms of publicity, 3 is usually sufficient. For instance, if someone wants to make something hefker, they just need 3 people there, and that is already considered to be a pirsum, a declaration in front of a number of people. When you bring 10, that takes on another status of publicity. We see that in Megillat Rut, when they bring together the people of the city, so 10 has a significance of sort of declaration. We also see that by Kiddush Hashem, that Asara is considered to be a public or have a certain standing within Kiddush Hashem or Chilul Hashem. So 10 takes on a differentiated or significant pirsum as 10, and it might also have to relate to the issue of minyan, that when you get 10 people together, they're a minyan. And we've spoken about this in other times, that Rav Soloveitchik in Shirim Lezeich Avi Umori mentions that that's the equivalent of a tamsit of Klal Yisrael, that any 10 people that get together as a minyan, they are as if they are the representation of all of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, it would be like a broad declaration to all of Klal Yisrael. And that's why Shmuel said over here to Rav Chana Bakta to get 10 people here, because he wanted to make such a significant declaration or make it clear that this is the halacha in this case. Tana Rabbanan, Hiniach Banim, if he left behind children, the Kohen, Elu ve'elu ochlim, then they both eat. Now, Elu ve'elu over here refers to both the Avdei Melog and the Avdei Tzon of Brazil. They eat the Truma, because the Avdei Melog, which belong to the mother, they eat Truma because the mother continues to eat Truma. The mother eats Truma even if she's a Bat Yisrael, because she has children from this Kohen. So since she has children from the Kohen, she's entitled to Truma. Her entitlement to Truma also passes to her Avdei Melog, and therefore the Avdei Melog also eat in Truma. On the other hand, the Avdei Tzon of Barzel, who belonged to the Kohen himself, when he passed away, they passed to his children. And since his children, who are Kohanim, eat Truma, they also grant that right to the Avdei Tzon of Barzel. Hinicha mi'uberet. If he left his wife pregnant, Eilu ve'elu einan ochlim. In that case, nobody eats. Number one, the mother does not eat. This is assuming that there are no other children here. So the mother does not eat because the ubar does not grant her the right to eat truma until it is born. For one of the two reasons that we brought above as to whether the ubar is considered a zar until he's born, or because only a yelod, someone who is born, can grant the right for someone to eat truma. So the mother then can't eat truma. And if she can't eat truma, then obviously her Avdei Melog don't eat truma. The Avdei Tzon and Bazel also don't eat here because there's no one granting them truma. The ubar has a right to them, and as being an ubar, he's eno machil. Heniach banim venicham uberet. What about a case very similar to our Mishnah, where he left children that are already there, plus he left his wife pregnant? So avdei melog ochlim. The avdei melog eat because the mother is going to eat truma here, or the wife of the goyim is going to eat truma here because of the already born children. So since she has right to truma, her avadim, through a transitive or derivative property, are also able to eat truma, keder shehi ochla, just like she eats, so do the avdei melog. On the other hand, the avdei tzon barzel lo yochlu, the avdei tzon barzel cannot eat, mipnei chelko shel ubar, because of the possession of the ubar in the avdei tzon barzel. He's now one of the yoshim of these avdei tzon barzel. Shubar posel, veinu machil. Like we said in our Mishnah, the ubar can only cause problems. He can't be machil, he can't grant the right to eat truma. That is the position of Divrei Rabbi Yossi. Like we saw Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah, so to hear in this Braita, that's the similar position in Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel be Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yossi, says, Omer Mishum Aviv, in the name of his father, Abat Machelet, Habein Enu Machil. The daughter will grant the right to eat in truma, but the son will not grant the right to eat in truma. Right now, we'll just leave it as that. The Gemara is going to investigate exactly what that means, or how a son or a daughter has a different impact in this situation. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer, Zocharim Yochlu Kulan. If they have male children, then everybody can eat over here, because the Ubar will not have a detrimental or deleterious effect on the situation, which the Gemara will explain in a second. Whereas, if he left Nikevot, if he left female descendants, then lo yochlu, then nobody can eat. Shema yimatzei ubar zachar, because it might turn out that the child that is born, this fetus, will be a zachar. Vein levanot b'makom ha-ben klom. And a son when there are only other female inheritors, the son becomes the primary inheritor, and therefore he will cause problems here for all those that are involved or eating because of the descendants that are here. So in the case of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, he says if they're all sons here, the ubar does not impact. Now the mother obviously will eat because of the existing children, and so too will her avdei melug. The avdei tonum barzel, according to Rabbi Shimon, will not be negatively impacted by the ubar because there already exist zicharim, and we'll have to discuss why that is the case. On the other hand, if the descendants are nikevot, again, the mother will eat truma because of the descendants that exist, the daughters that exist, and so too will her avdei melug. But the avdei tonum barzel over here will be infected by the ubar, by the fetus, because that fetus might undermine the complete ownership of the nikevot here. And if that's the case, then that ubar has impact here and will cause a problem for the tonum barzel, avdei tonum barzel. Again, we'll see this in the Gemara explaining exactly what the position of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is. So Gemara says, "My area, Shema Yimatzeu Bar Zachar." Why are you saying here that the problem is that the fetus that is born will be a male? And that's when you have all females, and then the ubar is a male, he'll cause a problem here. Typically, the nekeva nami paslo. Wait a minute. Even if the fetus here is female, it would also cause a problem. Here, if all the children that exist are females, then the ubar can be one of two things. It can either be a male. If it's a male, he'll take full ownership of all the Yerusha, and then the girls that were already there have no ownership, and he'll cause a problem for the Avadim, because the Ubar will have rights here that will negate the rights of the Nekevot. Where it says, why does it have to be a Zachar? Even if it's just a Nekeva, even if it's just a female that's born, the fact that the Ubar has rights in the Yerusha by itself will cause a problem, because now, say for instance, there were three children before and that were girls, this fourth child that's a girl will own 25% of all the Avadim, and that 25% ownership now is going to cause a problem for the Avadim because the Ubar is posel ve'enu ma'achil. So why did Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai in the Mishnah say that the problem is that the child might be a Zachar? Even if the child's a Nekeva, it would cause a problem. So when it says, you're right, Chada va'od gamar. It says, Chada Nekeva nami pasla. You're right, if the child is a Nekeva, it would cause a problem. Va'od, Shem Yimatei Ubar Zachar. So if even more problematic will be if it is a male child, because then he will disinherit all the existing girls, and the total ownership of the Avadim will now belong to this Zachar, or this Ubar, and therefore the Avadim would have no rights whatsoever in the Truma. So now we understand that part of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's position with regards to if there are already females that were born, what does the Ubar do to impact? And we said here that the Ubar is problematic. No matter what the Ubar is, whether it's a Nekeva or a Zachar, it will cause a problem. Therefore, the Avdei Tzonim Barzel will be precluded from eating Truma until the birth of this Ubar. Again, the mother and the Avdei Melog will eat because she already has descendants which grant her the right to Truma. Now we go back to the first statement of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and try to understand that, which is Zicharim Yochlu. If they are all Zicharim, then they have the entitlement to continue to eat the Avdei Tzonu Barzel. Vayiko Ubar. What about the Ubar? We said before that an Ubar has ownership here in the Nichsei Tzonu Barzel. If that's the case, then he should ruin it for these Avdei Tzonu Barzel. The Gemara says, Kasavar. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's position is premised on Ein Choshishim Le'Miuta. We don't worry about a minority issue here. Now why is it a minority issue? Because there's a 50% chance that this child is a Nekeva. There's a 50% chance that this child is a Zachar. Right? That's a binary option that a child that is born can either be a male or a female. If the child is a female, then it has no impact here whatsoever because there are only male children so far and the male children own the Avadim. The female fetus and later child that is born has no rights in the Yerusha. And since she has no rights in the Yerusha, there's no impact from her birth or even when she is in utero. So that's 50% at least has no impact in our situation here. You're right. The other 50%, if it is a male, then he'll be a partial owner of these Avadim and he will cause a problem. But in addition to that, we have to now add on the other possibility. Not every fetus is a viable entity. There's sometimes that a woman miscarries and the child doesn't come to full gestation and is not born as a viable entity. So now, if I combine that together, which is whatever the percentages you want to assign to the possibility of the woman miscarrying, let's just say that it's 80% of the women that are pregnant go to full term and have a healthy baby, 20% miscarry. So now, if I take the 80% that will go to full term and give birth to a viable entity, that 80% is divided, 40% will be males, and 40% will be females. In addition to that, 20% of fetuses will be miscarried and will not be a viable entity. So if I combine the 20% that will not be a viable entity with the 40% that will be a nekeva, then in 60% of the instances, there will be no impact on these avdei tzon or barzel. Meaning in the majority of scenarios, this child or this fetus has no impact on the avdei tzon or barzel. It's only the miut, the minority case of the 40% of viable entities that are zicharim, will be a problem. And that's what Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is saying. If you have all male children here, then the majority of instances, this fetus will not cause a problem for the avdei tzon and barzel. Therefore, they can continue to eat truma. Because there's only a minority chance that this fetus will be viable and will be a zachar, which will cause a problem for them. That's one way that the Gemara explains it. And others say, olam kasavar choshishim de miyuta. That we are choshesh de miyuta. Davidinan le takanto kid Rav Nachman amar Shmuel. But we fix the problem or we deal with the issue like Rav Nachman amar Shmuel. Damar Rav Nachman amar Shmuel, yitomim shebau lechalek b'nechzei avihem. If you have orphans who are ktanim, not of age yet, they come to divide up the estate of their father. Beitin mamidim lahem aputropus. Beitin assigns to them an executor of the estate. Now, some Rishonim explain here aputropus means a single executor to the estate. Rashi over here says that means that each yatom is granted a representative to be his advocate in the division of the property. Uborer lahem chelek yafeh. And each, according to Rashi, each executor on behalf of his constituent, his yatom, will go ahead and pick the best thing or best item for that child. Or according to Rishonim, like the Ritva, it means that a single executor will divide up the estate fairly between all the yatomim. So by doing that, what you can do is we can take the avadim here and assign ownership of the avadim to the yatomim, to the orphans over here, or to the inheritors, and disinherit the ubar. Because what we'll do is we'll grant in value equivalence avadim versus property, and so the avadim will be granted to the existing children, and the property will be given to the ubar. By doing that, you basically excise the ownership of the ubar and the avadim, and that's what allows them to continue to eat in the truma. So that's what Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is saying. If you have all zicharim here, then we can go ahead and divide up the property and have the ubar's ownership of the avadim be annulled in order to allow them to continue eat with truma. Higdilu, once the yatomim grow up, yecholim limchot, they can reject the division that was done for them by these executors. Rav Nachman didei omer, Rav Nachman himself, before he was quoting the name of his Rebbe Shmuel, over now Rav Nachman himself says, higdilu en yecholim limchot, when they become of age, they can't reject the decision of Beitin. Then you're basically undermining the power of Beitin. Why did Beitin appoint an executor to divide it up if in the end you're just going to unwind everything that was done? Now, Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel says you do unwind it, says that the division will be efficacious in assigning the peirot, meaning that the leaseholds or the production of the property has to be divided until they become of age. So the division of the executor will help for that, how to divide up the peirot until they become of age. But once they become of age, they can re-divide the property according to their own advocacy, instead of having an executor do it on their behalf. Whereas if Nachman says, then why should Beitin intervene at all? If Beitin goes and does it and then we undermine it in the end, it's going to undermine the power of Beitin in general, because it's going to make it look like Beitin has no ability to assign ownership. So we want the ownership, once it's assigned, to become permanent, because that shows that Beitin has the power to divide the property and make a difference in this situation. So Lema de Rav Nachman Tanayehi. Let us say now that this idea of Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, that you can divide the property up before the birth of the Ubar and basically cut out his ownership from the Avadim, or we appoint executors to divide it up. Let's say now that it's a Machloket Tanaim, because Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai subscribes to it. And obviously, the Tanakama, or the remainder of the Tanaim in that Braita, do not accept this position of Rav Nachman. Where it says, lo, the kulei alma itluhu de Rav Nachman. Everybody agrees that Rav Nachman's position is correct. We're going to go back and say, no, they're arguing about the first answer we gave as to why Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says that when they're all Zicharim, we don't worry about the Ubar, is because It's a question of whether we're choshesh the miyuta or we're not choshesh the miyuta. Do we worry about minority situations? So over here, Rabbi Shimon Yochai says, no, the Tanakhama says, yes, we are choshesh the miyuta, and therefore even when it's called zicharim, the uber has impact over here. Tosafot asks over here, even if you say in choshesh the miyuta, even if the baby is considered to be a nefel, is miscarried, and therefore doesn't have ownership over here, he says, but until the baby is miscarried, the uber has a right of kinyan. If the uber has a right of kinyan until it's miscarried, then it's not really a miyuta, because the uber has rights until it was miscarried. So Omeri Tosfot says, the hocha yeshli stop beg shemekvar hi nefel. You have to think, or we have to establish that the ubar, the fetus, was already a nefel prior to its being miscarried. So the chashash is not simply that she will miscarry, but the chashash is that maybe the baby isn't viable right now. Even in utero, it's not viable, and therefore she will miscarry in the future. Her miscarrying in the future is evidence of the fact that the ubar was not viable. And therefore, that's what makes the rove here between the hitstarfut, the connection of the nikevot, the possibility of it being a female, plus the possibility that the entity is not viable from the beginning. Those two together will become the majority, and therefore we won't be choshesh for the miyuta that would have caused a problem over here. Tosafot then poses the question, which is, over here it seems like, based on what the Gemara is saying, that Rabbi Yossi is choshesh the miyut. Yet in other places in Shas, we find that Rabbi Yossi is choshesh the miyut. So how do we reconcile between what the Gemara here is saying in the name of Rabbi Yossi versus what we find in Rabbi Yossi's position in other places in Shas? So some Rishonim answer that this is just a local issue. In this circumstance, that's what Rabbi Yossi's position is, but this is not to be extrapolated to other situations. Some Rishonim give reasons for why that is the case. For instance, the Ramban says that there's a difference between a miyut that has to do with future issues versus a miyut that is something that exists currently. Maybe in the cases where the item already exists or the miyut is a reality, maybe over there we're not choshesh for the miyuta. But in a case where you're projecting out into the future, maybe over there where there is a decent possibility of something happening, maybe over there we're choshesh the miyut. It also could be the difference between what type of miyut we're speaking about here. In our case over here, it seems like the miyut is a significant miyut. So maybe in the case of a significant miyut, Rabbi Yossi is choshesh, but in a case where it's a minority that is a much smaller miyut, maybe over there Rabbi Yossi would not be choshesh the miyut. Tosfot over here differentiates between a case of mamon and isur. So by dine isur, like the eating of truma, over there we're going to be choshesh the miyut because of its isur. Whereas by mamon, we're just going to say hochim b'mona achar rov. And therefore, maybe Rabbi Yossi's position is hochim acharov with regards to mamon, but by isur, he will say that we're choshesh the miyut because there's reason to be machmir. By mamon, there's no inyan of being machmir, and therefore we'll go after the rov. Over here, where there's a chashash isur, then we'll be machmir and be choshesh the miyut. Okay, now the Gemara goes back to explain more of that brighter that we brought before, which is the position of Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yossi omer mishum aviv, habat machil, Habein eno machil, that the daughter grants the right of the abadim to eat, whereas the ben is eno machil. Mar says, maishna ben delo machil, mishum chelko shel ubar. Why is it by a male child that he does not grant the right to the abadim to eat because the possibility of the ubar or the ubar's ownership in the abadim? Bat nami, if he only has a daughter, lo tachil mipnei chelko shel ubar. Again, the granted rights should have the same problem as the ubar. The ubar should have an impact over here similar to that by a ben. If you have a male child and then an ubar causes a problem, then a female child and an ubar will also cause a problem. So Amar Abaye, hacha b'nechasim mu'atim askinan. Here we're dealing with a case where there's not a lot of rusha. Ukugon d'ika ben b'hadibat. And number two is there are two children over here. When we say bat, we don't mean just the daughter. We mean a daughter and a son. So, manafshach. Because in this situation, either way, the abadim are going to have entitlement here. Ihai dem'abro benhu. If the fetus is a zachar, lo adif mihai dekoi. He's no better than the existing zachar that is in the estate. Ibati amayachlo. Why does the bat eat from the Yerusha? Bitakanta derabonon. That's because of a takanat derabanan. The Rabbanan only established the takana once the child is born, not when it is in utero. So let's explain what's happening over here. In general, mina Torah, when it comes to Yerusha, if you have male and females, then the males inherit the estate, and the females have no ownership. There is a takanat chachamim that the females are entitled to gain mizonot and to get their dowries out of the estate until they are of age or old enough and then go out and get married. So that is a grant in the Tanai Ketubah that the daughters are sustained or taken care of out of the estate, even though they're not yorshim of the estate. But that assumes that there's sufficient property in the estate, first of all, for the sons, the male children, to take possession and have the property. And in addition to that, to supply or support the females out of the estate. What happens if the estate is not that big and it doesn't have sufficient means to both support the daughters and then give Yerusha to the sons, or basically support the sons? In that case, the Chachamim have a takana that the sons will not inherit anything, and the daughters will be given everything in order that they'll be sustained out of the estate, and the sons will go around and they have to collect. They'll have to go door to door and collect money. And that is because the Chachamim wanted to protect the dignity of the daughters of the females, so they wouldn't have to go around begging for money. So they allowed the estate to go to the daughters so that they will have sufficient funds to eat from and to be sustained out of the estate. And then the sons will be, in a sense, disinherited from the Yerusha. So that's how we're explaining this position of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi now, which is that here you have a ben and a bat, you have a son and a daughter, and the estate only has limited funds. So since the estate has limited funds here, the daughter is going to be the inheritor in this case, because there's only enough to sustain her, and the son is basically being disinherited from the Yerusha over here. So that's what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi says. Let's look at this. In the case where you have a ben and a bat, and a son and a daughter, and you have limited resources, the daughter is the inheritor. So now the ubar, the child that's going to be born, is one of two possibilities. It's either a zachar, another male child, and the male children have already been disinherited. And so too, this new male child will be disinherited because of the takanat chachamim, and nothing has changed. So the Avdei Tzon and Barzel will eat because of the daughter's ownership over here of the property, and they will continue to eat because of her ownership. This new zachar will not change the reality. On the other hand, what happens if the ubar is a female? If she's a female, then she will join the existing female inheritor in ownership of the estate and being sustained out of the estate. Well, then there is shared ownership over here, and she will affect the Avdei Tzon and Barzel. That's what the Gemara said, that the Takanat Chachamim only takes effect once the child is born. Before the child is born, there's no impact of the Takanat Chachamim. And so therefore, this female will only have a piece of the Yerusha once she's born. When she's born, she can already grant the right to the Avdei Tzon and Barzel. When she's in utero, she has no impact or no ownership mit Takanat Chachamim. And therefore, the daughter that's here is the sole owner, and she can grant the rights of Truma to the Avdei Tzon and Barzel. And that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi's position. So in the case where there's a ben and a bat, that's where we say that the uber has no impact. When there's a ben, only a son, then the uber has an impact, like his father, Rabbi Yossi. And that's what he meant by bat and ben. Bat means a bat with the ben, and ben means just a ben alone. When it's a ben alone, then you have a problem with the uber. If it's a bat together with the ben, then you don't have a problem. This is in a case where the estate is a small estate and the daughters are going to inherit all the monies of the estate. Gemara says, Ema Seifa. What about the latter half of the Braita where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is speaking? And there it says, Shema Yimatzea Ubar Zachar, Ve'en LaBanot B'Makom Ben Klom. So there's a case here. Maybe the Ubar will be a Zachar. And there's a case where there were all female inheritors until this point in time. And then if the son is born, he'll inherit everything. Well, if he's going to inherit everything, then there's an indication here that we're talking about nechasim mirubim. We're talking about sufficient estate assets that the son will inherit, and then the daughters will be nizonot. But obviously it's not like what we're describing here, that we're talking about a case of nechasim mirubim. So my answer is, seifa atan nechasim mirubim. You're right. The Bright is talking about different cases. The case by Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is talking about a case where there are limited assets in the estate. Whereas that last statement of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is talking about a case where the estate assets are sufficient that the son would inherit if there was a son, b'makom banot. Where it says, u'nuchasim mu'atim de banot inhil. Are you so sure that you're right over here, that these are the possessions of the banot when there are limited assets in the estate? Now it is a tanai ketubah. It is a condition of the ketubah that the daughters will be granted the right to be nizonit and actually exclude the children or the male children completely from the estate in this situation, which is that basically the males are being disinherited because of the ketubah. But how strong is that? Is that really true? Because mina Torah, all this property belongs to the males and not to the females. V'hama Rabbi Asiyam Rabbi Yochanan yitomim shikadmu umachru b'nechassim mu'atim. If the male children go ahead and transact with these assets, mashimachru machru, whatever they sold is sold. Meaning that mina Torah, the male children really have the rights here. And we are just using the ketubah and the lien of the obligations of the ketubah to grant that right to the daughters. But mi'ikar adin, the real owners of the property here are the males. And I can give you evidence of that because if they transact in this property, that transaction will grow through and be efficacious. So you see, the true owners over here are the male children. If that's the case, your whole explanation does not hold water, because even b'nechassim mu'atim, yes, the daughters have the primary rights because of the ketubah, but the true ownership still resides with the male children. If that's the case, then you have a problem here, because if the ubar is a male, then he does have impact over here on the ownership. Elamai. So then how we can explain Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi? Bat, diktani, aim. When he said bat, he didn't mean the daughter, he means the mother. Meaning that the mother who has rights to eat in Shuma, she grants that rights to her Avde Melog. Just like she eats. So therefore, the Avde Melog are granted the right to eat. But the Ben, if you have a son here, then the son who is encumbered by the Ubar, because the Ubar has partial ownership in the Avde Tzon of Brazil, they're affected by the Ubar, and they cannot eat the Shuma. And so basically what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is saying is Habat, which really means aim. The aim eats Shuma because of the existing children. Since she eats Shuma, she also grants that right to her Avde Melog. On the other hand, the Avde Tzon of Brazil are affected by the Ben. If you have a child that is here and the Ubar, together that joint ownership causes a problem for the Avde Tzon of Brazil. So the Gemara says then, Hainu de Rabbi Yossi. If that's the case, then it's no different than his father Rabbi Yossi. It is exactly what his father Rabbi Yossi just described in those first scenarios in the Baraita. Gemara says, Kula Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi k'tanei lo. You're right, Eino Hanami. That first section is also Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi saying in the name of his father. And the entire first section is really one shita, the shita of Rabbi Yossi being brought by his son Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. Okay, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Ha'ubar v'yavam v'irusim v'cheresh u'ben teisha shanim v'yom echad poslim v'lo ma'achilim. All of these individuals will cause problems in terms of Truma, but they also will not grant the right to Truma. Now, Ubar, we already described, or we discussed in the previous Mishnah, the Gemara to give us a little more information about it. The remainder have this same effect on a woman, or the Avadim here, because of the in limbo state of the woman with regards to each of these individuals. And again, in each of these cases, the Gemara will go through what the story is. Safeg. We have a case where he's a safek, whether he's 9 years old in one day or not. And again, you have to assume here that he's coming for Beit Din where he's already beyond that age. And therefore, we don't know what was at the time that the incident took place. Safek hevi bet zarot, safek shelo hevi. It was safek whether he's already of age or not of age. Again, he's coming before us at the point where he was already of age. Therefore, there's no chazakah that he was a katan until this point in time, because now he's already post the status, and we're trying to go back and figure out what happened at an earlier stage. Nafala bayit alav val bat achiv. A house fell on him, and bat achiv is his niece, who he's married to, that is his wife. Ve'in yodua is meit rishon, and we don't know which one passed away first. Tzareta choletze velo mitya bemet. Her co-wife has to do chalitza with the brother, and not yibum. Again, we'll get into this later on, but this is a case that we've seen throughout the Masechta, which is that when you have a co-wife that is an erva, she's poter all the co-wives. So in this case, where he's married to his niece, and the individual passed away, then the co-wife and the niece fall to the brother. The niece can't marry the brother because it's his daughter. So therefore, she is p'turah from yibum, and so too will her co-wife be p'turah from yibum. On the other hand, if the co-wife died first, meaning the niece died first, then the only wife remaining at the time that he passed away was the wife that has no relationship to the brother, and then she would be available for Yibum. So here there's a safek, whether she can perform Yibum, or sefek whether she's p'turah. Because that's a fake, she's choletzet velo mitya bemet. What this case has to do with the Mishnah is not clear, because it's not a flow from the Mishnah. It just has to be a case of sefek that fits into our Masechta, and that's why the Mishnah includes it, even though it's not necessarily topically relevant to the previous cases that we're speaking about in the Mishnah. Now, ha'ubar, the guard's tumabar, e bat kohen l'Yisrael, he, if the wife here is a bat kohen who's married to Israel, pasula, then the ubar causes her a problem, because if she had no children, she would go back to Beit Avia to eat chuma. But now that she's pregnant, that child now disqualifies her from going back to her father's house, because it says kinni ureha. She only returns to her father's house kinni ureha, prat lemuberet. Like, if she is like she was when she was a ne'ara. Well, when she was a ne'ara, she wasn't pregnant. So over here, when she's muberet, she's not entitled to go back and eat chuma in her father's house. If it is a bat Yisrael married to a kohen who was entitled to eat chuma because of her husband, and if she has descendants from this husband, she will also continue to eat chuma and have the right to chuma. Lo machila. This fetus will not grant her the right to eat chuma until it is born, because yalud machil, sheinu yalud, einu machil. Only if the child is born does it grant her the right. But before the child is born, it does not grant her the right to chuma. And that's what it means, that the ubar is posel and einu machil. Posel at the bat kohen, and einu machil at the bat Yisrael. Hayavam. Here is a woman who is waiting for a yavam to perform yibam with her. She is a shomeret yavam. Ibat kohen Yisrael, if she is a bat kohen married to Yisrael, which would entitle her to the right to go back to her father's house, because she has no children from this individual. Nevertheless, pasila, the fact that she has to wait for this yavam now ruins it first. She may not return to her father's house to eat chuma, because it says v'shavel beit avia, that she returns to her father's house, prat l'shomeret yavam. That excludes the case of shomeret yavam, where she's still in waiting, she's still connected to this brother, and that does not entitle her to go back home. Since she's not entitled to go back home, she may not eat chuma. I bat Yisrael l'kohen hi, if it's a bat Yisrael that's married to a kohen, and she had the right to eat chuma because she was married to the kohen, but now he passed away and they have no children, she doesn't have that right anymore. Lo machilo. Then this woman is a shomeret yavam, and she would wait to be married to his brother who is a kohen. That kohen brother does not grant her the right of truma yet until she's married. Why? Because kinyan kaspo aramachmana v'ha kinyan de'achivu. Because the Torah says kinyan kaspo, she has to be his wife, his ownership, his family. And over here, she's in the family because of his brother, not because of him. Now, if he has nisuin, if he takes her as a wife, she will be entitled to truma. But until he takes her as a wife, she's not entitled to truma. The question of this drush over here, whether this is a drush of d'oraita or d'rabanan, is a machloket rishonim. The Rabbeinu Tam says that this is just an asmachta in the pasuk, but it's not a true drusha. Mina Torah, she is entitled to eat truma, because a woman is already entitled to eat truma from the erusin. And since she had erusin with the brother, and the erusin is still intact, because that's what's keeping her locked in to have yibum with this yavam, technically mina Torah, she is entitled to truma. But midrabanan, we are poseler because of this drasha. There are other rishonim believe that the drasha is a drasha de'oraita, and she's not entitled to truma over here, and it only affects truma de'oraita. But in cases of truma de'rabanan, she will be entitled to eat that truma midrabanan, because the rabbanan granted the right of a yavama to eat truma in certain instances where she is a shomeret yavam. Vairusin, e bat kohen Yisrael hi. Erusin, if she is a bat kohen that is going to be now married to Israel, pasila, she no longer participate in the truma of her father's house, because now she's technically married to this Israel. And that Israel takes her away from her father's house, and then she's no longer entitled to truma. Da'kanyo b'havaya. He now has taken ownership of the woman, married this woman through the kiddushin, and it says bat kohen ki tiyeh l'ishzar. And she already has a havaya with an ish zar. She has marriage or erusin with an ish zar that disqualifies her from the truma of her father's house. V'hi bat Yisrael the koheni, if she's a bat Yisrael that is marrying a kohen, then lo machila, the erusin do not grant her the right to eat in truma, mishum de ula, because of the takana of ula. Now we know, and we've mentioned this before in the Masechta, that erusin does entitle the bat Yisrael to eat in truma, Mina Torah, Midoraita, she is entitled, because she's now kinyan kaspo of the kohen, and she is entitled to eat truma. The Chachamim, or Gozer, that is not the case, either Mishum Ula is because until she has Nisuin, she lives by her father's house. And we're afraid if she's going to eat Truma by her father's house, then her father, her brothers, will also eat from the Truma that she's eating, and then they'll be eaten by Zarim. She's the only one who's entitled to eat Truma, not her father's household. So therefore we say, wait until the Nisuin to eat Truma. That's one, that's Ula. Or the other reason brought in the Gemara Ketubot is Mishum Simpon, which is there is a possibility that when the husband comes to marry her and have Nisuin, he'll find something wrong with the woman, and that will undermine or retroactively disqualify or annul the Kiddushin, and if that's the case, she wasn't entitled in the interim to eat Truma. So we wait until the Nisuin to say that there's a consummation of this marriage and the Kiddushin are fully effective to grant her the right to eat Truma. So technically, Erusin Min HaTorah has the right to disqualify a Bat Kohen and qualify a Bat Yisrael. But because of Ulor, because of Simpon, these Takanat Chachamim, the Erusin works in that way, which is that it disqualifies a Bat Kohen, but also does not qualify a Bat Yisrael. Vacheresh, a Cheresh, which we've spoken about in the past, according to the Chachamim, does not have a status of a Bardat. So, I Bat Kohen Yisrael, if she's a Bat Kohen Yisrael, Pasila, Takanya Betakanta Derabonon. Since his Kiddushim are effective Midrabanan, that effective Kiddushim Midrabanan now disqualify her from the Truma of her father's house. Vi Bat Yisrael Kohenhi, if it's a Bat Yisrael Kohenhi, Lo Machil. He does not grant her the right to eat in Truma because you need Kinyan Kaspo Amarachmana. The Torah says he has to have rights, ownership in her, real Kiddushin in her. V'haylav bar Kinyanhu. But because he's a Cheresh, and therefore he doesn't have the status of a Bardat, he's unable to create the Kinyan Midoraita that would grant her the rights of Truma. So Midrabanan, the Cheresh, has enough Kiddushin to be posel a Bat Kohen, but he does not have enough power Midoraita to entitle Abat Yisrael to Truma, and this obviously is all premised on the Gemara's understanding that the Cheresh has a din like a Katan and a Shoteh, and we've spent a lot of time in the past explaining what that situation is, and how in the modern era that might have changed because the Cheresh, or many Cherishim today, are classified as Bardat, and therefore they might have the ability to make Kinyanim, even Midoraita, and the din might completely be completely different today, vis-a-vis what was true in their day, which was that a Cheresh had a status that wasn't very much different than a Shoteh. Okay, we're going to stop over here, but the second two dots on the top of Samach Chet Amud Aleph.